Hello. Are we hot? Yes, we are. If I could get your attention, please. Wow, look at how many people are in this room. Does that tell you something about how necessary this particular session is for all of us here? Are we all experiencing a little bit of burnout? A little bit of overwhelm? Well, I know that I'm in that category, so I'm so glad that I'm helping to moderate this event, because that's what it's all about. We want to welcome you so much. My name is Lorraine Ballard Morrill. I'm the Director of News and Community Affairs for the 6 Clear iHeart Media radio stations. And this session is going to be amazing. I'm thrilled to be here. We are proud to be a partner, iHeart, of the Pennsylvania Conference for Women, which is full of great tools. Weren't those morning speakers fantastic? Carla, oh my gosh, Shonda, Sean. This is what we're going to be talking about today: creating your meaningful life, avoiding burnout, and finding joy. We have an extraordinary hour for you. I know many of you are feeling a little overwhelmed and burned out. We agree that the concept of work-life balance is elusive. It's a work in progress for all of us. So I'm excited to introduce positive psychology professor Emily Esfahani Smith to find out why and learn ways to create a life with meaning and joy while increasing your energy and create your meaningful life. Avoid burnout and embrace the benefits of increased health, happiness, and satisfaction. We have panelists that are also going to join in this conversation. So let me begin by bringing up Carol Lee Mitchell, Senior Vice President, National Accounts, MasterCard. Jamila Payne, President and CEO of Ideas, Action Design, and creator of Daily Success Routine. Niharika Shah, Vice President and Head of Brand Marketing and Advertising for Prudential. And now, I'd like to introduce positive psychology professor Emily Esfahani Smith, author of The Power of Meaning, Crafting a Life That Matters.
I'm not actually a professor, but if you want to call me professor, I won't object. Thank you guys for being here today. So this is about meaning and burnout. And one of the kind of strongest findings within positive psychology research that relates to burnout is if you're trying to figure out how to overcome it, how to burn in, as one of my friends says, instead of burning out, you need to have meaning in your life. Meaning is what protects people from burnout. So I'm really excited that we're going to be talking about that with these wonderful women today. So I wrote a book about leading a meaningful life, and so I thought I would tell you a little bit about what my meaning story is, what brought me here today. And I think that what I tell you will kind of help set the ground for the discussion that we'll have. So for me, this journey really began several years ago when I was in graduate school studying positive psychology, and I came across a work called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And I'm just wondering how many of you have heard of that book or heard of Frankl? Yes, that's a good amount. So Frankl was a psychiatrist living in Vienna during World War II. He was also Jewish, and in 1942, 75 years ago, he and his family were arrested and transported to a Nazi concentration camp. 3 years later, the camp was liberated, and when Frankl survived, but his family, his parents, many of his relatives, and his pregnant wife had died. Wow. And Frankl wrote a book within that same year, this book I mentioned called Man's Search for Meaning, where he talks about the importance of having meaning to withstand suffering. So he worked as a therapist in the camps, and he talked about how for so many of the people who he encountered there, they had given up hope. They had lost everything. They'd lost their identities, their homes, their possessions. Many of them had lost people that they loved. And so understandably, many of them decided that there was nothing left to live for. They decided that their lives were not meaningful. And they kind of gave up on life. But there were others who, even though they had lost everything as well, still managed to hold on to some meaning or purpose that helped drive them forward. And Frankl tells the story of two people who were suicidal and who he counseled in the camps as an example. So both of them were suicidal, and yet for both of them, Frankl realized it was a matter of getting them to see that there was something still being expected of them in the future, something that they were responsible for that was their purpose. For one man, it was his son who was living in a different country. So the idea that maybe one day I will be free of this and I'll see my son again gave him the will to kind of hang on to life. For another, who was a scientist, it was a series of books that he had been working on and that he wanted to complete once the war was over. So in both cases, because of who they were, because of their kind of unique circumstances, they had this particular purpose, and realizing what that purpose was made them more resilient ultimately in the face of suffering. So Frankl's signature contribution to psychiatry, and I would just say to the world of ideas, is that human beings have a need for meaning. We're meaning-seeking creatures. Without meaning, we suffer. And when we have meaning, even if we're not necessarily, feeling a lot of positive emotions, even if we're stressed, when we have that meaning, we feel like we're flourishing and like our lives are moving forward in a positive direction. So for me, this really resonated with me when I first read it. And it also made me see that the messages that our culture sends about what a good life is are a little bit at odds with what Frankl was promoting. So in our culture, we're told constantly that a good life is a happy life and that we should pursue happiness, and that if we do, all of these benefits will accrue. And I don't have anything against happiness. I like being happy and I want the people I love to be happy. Whoops. Can you guys still hear me? Yeah, okay.
It's your phone.
Yeah, thank you. But what the research tells us, this new and growing body of research within positive psychology, is that happiness, chasing happiness, can sometimes lead us astray. So I'll put this out there. Some of the research shows that when we kind of pursue happiness and value it the way that our culture encourages us to do, we can actually end up feeling unhappy. And I think this is even more provocative. When you look at the world that we're living in, so many things are getting so much better. So rates of poverty are decreasing. People are wealthier than they ever have been before. People are far less likely to die of violent deaths, to die of starvation, sickness, and disease. And yet, in spite of the fact that life is getting better in terms of all these objective measures, more people feel hopeless, depressed, and alone. Rates of depression have been rising for decades. Rates of loneliness have been rising. Rates of anxiety, rates of burnout. And lastly, and most tragically, the suicide rate has been rising in countries around the world. And when researchers crunch the numbers, what they find is that what's driving this rise in despair is not a lack of happiness. In fact, the happiest countries in the world are also the places where the rates of suicide are the highest. What's driving this rise in despair is a lack of meaning. So meaning and happiness are different. Happiness, the way many psychologists and philosophers define it, is a positive mental and emotional state. So if you feel good, you're happy. If you feel bad, you're unhappy. But meaning is about connecting and contributing to something beyond yourself. So when people tell psychologists that their lives are meaningful, it's because three conditions have been satisfied. The first one is they think that their lives have value and worth. In other words, they think their lives are significant. The second one is they feel that their lives are driven by a sense of purpose. So they have some kind of goal that they value that's a long-term aim and that organizes their current activities. And finally, they believe their lives are coherent, which means that they don't think of the world as random. They don't think of their own experiences and their own lives as kind of a string of random and disconnected events, but their life has some kind of narrative, some kind of order to it, and that gives them this feeling of coherence as opposed to senselessness. So that's the difference between meaning and happiness. And when researchers look at the difference between people who pursue meaning, as opposed to those who kind of chase and prioritize happiness, what they find is that the people who do devote themselves to leading meaningful lives experience, as I mentioned earlier, less burnout. They are more resilient to suffering. They're more likely to do better in school if they're students. They're more likely to do better at work. They're more likely to be more engaged at work. And they're also more likely to experience this kind of deeper form of well-being that I think we're all striving for. You know, Viktor Frankl said that you can't pursue happiness. It must ensue. It's the byproduct of leading a meaningful life. So that's, in a long-winded way, that's kind of, those ideas are what brought me here ultimately and to writing the book that I did. And I'm excited to dive into them a little bit more deeply with these women. So I think that we'll get started now on the panel. And you've all already been introduced, so maybe we can just begin by having you each tell a meaning story or talk a little bit about what brought you to this panel, and then we'll kind of discuss a little bit, and then we'll take questions from the audience in the last 15 minutes or so. So Niharika Shah.
I'll go.
Yeah.
So I work for Prudential, and I've been there for now 7 years. And I think the best way to describe my journey there, I come from a world of agency and consulting where, you're judged by the last mock thought or idea you had. And for me, it's been a journey of finding my purpose through a purposeful company. And I think it's been a fascinating and eye-opening and quite an introspective and learning experience. And I think you're absolutely right, Emily, for what I've when I find meaning, I think the meaning is when your purpose, the impact of that is reflected back to you, either through the work that you do or the people that you impact, whether directly or indirectly, and the circle is closed in some form or fashion. So for me, that is really giving meaning to the number of hours that I spend away from my family at work.
If I can just ask you real quickly. So you said that your purpose comes from connecting to your company's purpose. So what is your company's purpose? And yeah.
Connecting, but also learning from how an organization, I honestly believe that purpose can't be invented. It has to be discovered. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've gone through the journey at Prudential is what has inherently been the founding purpose and the ethos of the company, but really crystallizing that to the top and then getting people to appreciate it and becoming amplifiers for that, right? So the way that we've articulated our purpose is to really bring financial security within the reach of everyone. Mm-hmm. It's an ambitious idea. It's one that's needed more than ever. And it's very true to the founding principles of the company, you know. So I think it checks all the boxes in terms of, is it timely? Is it needed by people? Is it authentic? Is it ownable? And I think that applies to individual purpose as well.
So I think what I'm hearing you say is that for you, when you connect what you're doing to that larger purpose, and when you see that the tasks that you do, whether if they're tedious, if they're stressful, if they're taking many hours away from your, you know, other things, other important matters, that when you're doing whatever it is you're doing, that's your work, you see it as ultimately providing this financial stability to people, and that's what kind of drives you forward.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Jamila.
Yeah. So meaning in my life actually came through a health tragedy. So at just 36 years old, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I thought that I was invincible. I had been living in South Africa for 2 years, and I had recently moved back to Philadelphia. And on my desk, in my office, I had my new health insurance plan that I just needed to sign off on that my agent given me, but I hadn't done it yet. So my South Africa insurance just expired, and then here I am diagnosed with breast cancer. I was in the middle of planning a women's conference, and can you believe it? My thought was, I don't want to cancel the conference. The conference is 2 weeks away, but I'm diagnosed with breast cancer. What am I thinking, right? But it brought a bigger vision to life, which was, in that moment, I realized that I wasn't afraid of dying. I was afraid of not living out my full potential. There was a lot in my life that I knew that I was meant to accomplish and that I was put here to do. And up until then, I felt like while I knew I had that anointing on my life, I was playing pretty small. I was holding back on as big as I could be and going for the things that I really wanted to. And that really helped me to get clear about, you know, what my journey was. So thank goodness that I'm, you know, cancer free now. I was able to discover it very early. Yep. And salute to all my other survivors in the room. You know what it's like to go through that experience. I know that there's tons of you in here today. But that brought me to the work that I'm doing today, which is daily success routines. So we're a brand that's focused on helping busy professionals to seamlessly conquer work and life. And so our signature product is a planner called the Daily Success Routine. But I also go into companies and organizations and do talks and workshops about being able to seamlessly conquer work and life, because it's really important, especially for us as women, that we're winning outside of the office and not just in the office. And so I'm here to revolutionize the way that we work. Yeah.
Love it.
Thanks. Thank you, Jamila.
Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Carolee Mitchell. I'm Senior Vice President from MasterCard. I've been with MasterCard for 12 years, and I grew up in the payments financial industry. And I think what drew me to this topic is I am a product of corporate America, and every single one of us at some point have been in a situation where you're like, why am I here? What's my purpose? How did I get here, and how do I get out? No, I'm kidding. But the reality is it's a reflective thought that I think many of us can relate to. For me personally, I love your sort of prelude, Emily, about sort of meaningfulness and happiness, because I would agree. I sort of think of it as almost sort of a recipe for meaningfulness around three key ingredients that I think about. One is clarity around purpose. What am I doing here? What's my role and how do I get here? And I think it's an important thing, clarity. The second piece is really around community. I think as you start to get higher in your organization, you start to take on leadership roles, you want to have a mechanism to give back. You want to give and take. And I think community is one of those things that I've really thought a lot about in the last 15 years. And I think that's an important part of the recipe. The third ingredient for me is really around small challenges and small commitments. This is really kind of a celebration of life. I think meaningfulness is just sort of a way. It's not an end state. And so for me, I wanted to kind of explore this idea in a conversation format with like 1,000 of us here and really just begin to explore this whole notion of meaningfulness versus happiness. So delighted to be here today.
Thank you. Those are all, you all are clearly living, you know, meaning and working through these questions. And I think just as a, before we kind of continue the discussion, I'd be curious to know among you, the audience, how many of you consider your life to be meaningful? Mm-hmm. And how many of you are searching for meaning or wish that your life were more meaningful?
Mm-hmm.
Can it be
both?
It can be, of course. Yeah, all of the above.
I think so. Yeah.
And so I asked that question because maybe we could talk a little bit about moments in our own lives when we felt like our lives weren't as meaningful as we wanted them to be, or moments where we were in a transition and kind of felt like we weren't sure what direction to go in next and how we found our way. Jamila, I'm going to start with you just because your story had that, and you talked a little bit about how the diagnosis really clarified that you were holding back and you didn't want to. So could you say a little bit more about that and take us through your reasoning and what you changed in your life afterwards?
Yeah, so I think maybe, so I'll answer that, and maybe it causes me to take a step back. Mm-hmm. So when I came back to the U.S. From that experience of living in South Africa, it was not with the intent of staying here. So I had got another opportunity to work for another organization, and I was coming home for the holidays with the intent to go back in January. Well, when I got my official contract, it was for $30,000 less than what they promised me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, talk about questioning meaning, mm-hmm. right? So I was loving the work that I was doing, but it's like, do I accept less than the value of my work to go back to live in that experience? And so it was very difficult for me because here I was living the life in South Africa, literally coming back to a time in the US where things were very doom and gloom and people were in a morbid state. And I felt like, what am I gonna do now that I'm here? I felt really lost at that period in my life. And then to ricochet that into a whole series of health issues. So I think that the things that I did was to do a lot of introspection. So I spent a lot of time listening to motivational talks and things that would help keep me inspired and focused on my goal. But even as I was going through treatment, the thing that kept me going and driving was my connection to meaning. So at that point, I had the vision for daily success routine and what that business would look like. And my mom and my other family members were really worried about me because I was so elated the whole time. Like, I'm going to the doctor's office. I'm like, yeah, this is great. And they were like, who's staying with her tonight? Like, they thought she's seriously going to cut herself at any minute. Like, something's wrong with her. But it was that focused direction towards this greater purpose in my life. I know that I'm meant to make a difference in the world by helping and supporting busy professionals and especially women in this way. And I just kept focused on that, and that is exactly what pushed me through. So I think that it's important to get clear about what it is that you want to create in your life. And I want to just clarify one point before I wrap up, because I think in a session like this, we talk a lot about purpose and passion. And I think those words can get very foggy. So I feel like in life, you'll have lots of passions, but you really have to understand, and those passions will change. So you might be passionate about your kids, you might be passionate about your work, might be passionate about music. You're not meant to do all of those things to earn a living. So pick the thing that you want to be your work. What is the thing that you want to create in the world and how you can make a difference for yourself and other people and do that? But don't stop, don't halt your ability to move forward because you feel like there's this one passion or purpose in life that you are meant to achieve. That is absolutely not the case.
That's such a good point. And I want to underline it because it's so important. I think it's such a misconception about leading a meaningful life that you have to have one capital P purpose, one capital P passion, when in fact your passions change and so does your purpose. Your purpose changes throughout life. You know, when you're working, it might be one thing. After you're retired, it might be another.
Right.
I think what I really liked about what you were saying was that in your kind of transition, in your turning point moment, there was moments of kind of questioning and then moments of kind of clarity. And I think it's important to know that because we all are going to experience these transition moments, and the research shows that during them, we will feel like our lives are less meaningful, we'll feel more adrift, and yet if we push through them, we end up coming to like this greater sense of clarity and meaning. So it's okay, basically, if you're in a moment where you're transitioning between jobs, your kids left the house maybe, you know, you're retiring, to kind of be questioning and to not feel so great about it, because there will be, you know, that introspection will kind of help you figure out what where you should be going next.
And Emily, if I could just say one other thing, which is don't get caught in the analysis of it. So you're not going to figure it out inside of your head. When you're going through that transition, it's really important that you say, okay, what is my pilot project? So what is the thing that I'm going to test out? If you're feeling like you should make a career transition, can you go and do informational interviews with somebody else that is in that field? If you're feeling like you should start a business, what's the minimum way that you can test out that business idea? But stop trying to think through what you should do next and start testing out what you should do next. And that's how you'll figure out what really resonates for you.
Carolee, I know that you've spent a lot of time thinking about turning points and how they've shaped you. And maybe you could tell us about one of those turning points and who you were before, who you became sure. after, and what you learned?
Sure, happy to. So I'll answer that with a story. You know, I probably about 10 years ago, NPR in Los Angeles, California, did a vignette on my grandfather. And this is a grandfather I knew very, very well. Picked me up every Sunday. We went to church, went to McDonald's. I blame McDonald's for the ginormous of my growth. I mean, my parents are like 5'1". And I think one of the things that surprised me was they were writing this vignette about his life and his story. And I thought, well, that's interesting. My grandfather was a minister. That's interesting. Business owner, okay, that was interesting as well. But what could they possibly be writing about? And they did this vignette and I listened to it and the title was Renaissance Man. And I thought, that is so interesting. My grandfather is a Renaissance man, what does that mean? And throughout his life, he was a professional hockey player. He was a professor at a very prestigious university in Korea. He was a political advocate during the war. He migrated to this country, was a small business owner. He was a fashion designer at one point. He was a writer, a poet, a minister. And I thought for a second, like, wow, this is somebody that lives in my daily life, and I didn't know how amazing he was. Fast forward to my life. I was always a very driven individual. I always had focus on one thing, and that was sort of whether it was work or school, completely driven. And when I discovered that my grandfather had all of these other things going on, it really was a turning point for me because perspective around meaning, purpose, it's not one-dimensional. It doesn't have to be one-dimensional. Multidimensional purpose, I think, helps us grow, helps us push ourselves to that next level. And I think that, you know, for me, it was opening up multiple lanes on the expressway, so kind of the analogy I would use, so that as I'm racing down my career path, I'm equally focusing in on my community, friends and family, what can I give back, also personal interests, hobbies. You know, I'm so envious of somebody who's like, what are you reading? I'm reading this amazing book, and when do you get time to read? You know, I joined a book club with my good friends here who's sitting in the audience. You know, I think it's a discipline. It's a muscle that we have to work. It doesn't just happen. And I think a turning point for me was purposeful meaningfulness is not something that just kind of appears. You have to work on it. And if you think of it as a discipline and building a muscle, it really gives you an opportunity to make smart choices to kind of get at that meaningfulness and really kind of being present at a whole level.
Yeah. No, it's so true. So it's an ongoing process. It's not like you just find your meaning and purpose.
Right.
And that, I mean, your grandfather's story is perfect. He went through all these different stages, all these different facets of his personality.
Right.
And, you know, as you were talking, there were two things that came to mind. And one of them was, you mentioned in your introduction, the importance of purpose and community to meaning. And then with your grandfather, you talked about his story.
Right.
And in my own research for my book, I found that there were these four pillars of a meaningful life, and they kind of overlap with what you were saying.
Yeah.
One is belonging, so being in relationships where you feel like you matter. One is purpose, so this goal or what you're doing with your life. One was storytelling. So what's the story that you want to tell about your life? What's the story
right.
that you're telling about your life? Is it a good story? Is it a healthy story? Is it dysfunctional? We can change our stories, and we don't always realize that. So storytelling. And then the final one, which wasn't mentioned, is transcendence, which is about kind of connecting to something bigger. So that was one thing. And then the other thing was that the importance of a model, a role model for you in living a meaningful life. I know there's a lot of young people here in this audience as well, like, you know, school-aged children. And are we modeling meaningful living for them? Who are our own models of a meaningful life? When you think about your grandfather, I feel like what you were saying was, wow, I kind of want to have a life like that.
Right.
And so what kind of life do we each want to have? What are we aspiring to?
And I think what was interesting for me is role models. I mean, the definition of a role model mm-hmm. doesn't have to be someone famous
mm-hmm. yeah.
or some rock star. Mm-hmm. It can be your grandparent. It can be somebody, you know, an elderly. So mm-hmm. I'm a big advocate for elderly. My mom lives with mm-hmm. me. I'm surrounded by the elderly. Mm-hmm. I always sort of say that it's a blessing because they have so much wisdom and so much experience mm-hmm. that we can kind of glean from.
Yeah.
And so this whole notion of role model, pay attention, watch, learn, speak, have a conversation, I think is so important, especially in our day and age.
Yeah.
And taking advantage of the people that have lived And learning from that, I think, is an important sort of discipline. And I use the word discipline on purpose. It's a discipline and muscle that we need to continue to build.
Niharika, I know as we're emailing back and forth, you mentioned your grandmother, and I wonder, was she a role model to you? Could you tell us about her influence?
Well, very similar to what we've been talking about. But so let me take you back in terms of setting. So I'm fascinated by the art of storytelling. So let me try this one. Mm-hmm. Go back to India, a small village, about 100 years ago. Right, and unfortunately, and it is still a case today, but child marriages were rampant. So kids would get married when they were 9, 10, 11, 12, you know. But they would live in their parents' household. The daughter wouldn't go to her husband's, quote unquote, if you can call that, household until she came of age. So there was this little girl at 11, and she became a widow. The boy she was married to died. Mm-hmm. And what would have happened at that time were two things. One is she would have either been burned alive with the mm-hmm. son, with the child, or taken to the in-laws' house and condemned to a life of essentially being a servant for the family, right? And at that time, the village, and especially her grandfather, had this idea that it was not acceptable. This was not something they were willing to settle for. And they smuggled her off, overnight to another town and basically said, hey, she had died too. Mm-hmm. But what is wonderful about this story is 30 years later, she went on to become one of the first women who got her master's in philosophy mm-hmm. and was the principal of an all-girls school mm-hmm. At the age of 38. She met another man who was a widower himself, and he had the courage to marry a child widow, which was a social no-no at that time. Mm-hmm. And then she went on, of course, to have 6 children. Now, who I'm talking mm-hmm. about, of course, we gave it away, but was my grandmother, yeah. right? And I think it goes back to the idea is when you look for meaning in the introspection and the role models, and you have the maturity, I think, and the time to reflect back on the people that you think you know or have met, and take this time to understand their stories, I find so much meaning. I think mm-hmm. the shortest distance between two people is a story. Mm. And I think if the more and more that we can reach out to each mm-hmm. other to learn those stories, I think we'll find inspiration and meaning ourselves. But what that meant for me eventually was 3 things, right? One, it does take a village, literally, mm-hmm. sometimes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The second, shit happens. I'm sorry I'm saying that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
It does, you know? But get over it, right? Yeah. You know, and I think move on. And then finally, I think for me, it's never losing a sense of wonder and curiosity. Mm. I think the what if, those two words are so magical. Mm. And I think we can bring them with us every day, everywhere we go.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. And yeah, there's so much to admire in your grandmother's story, the resilience, the fact that she was a pioneering woman, her grittiness. I mean, it's really amazing. And I loved what you said. I want to make sure I'm getting it right. The shortest distance between two people is a story.
It's actually a riff of Victor Borge's quote, which said a shortest distance between two people is a smile. But I've sort of extended that to a story because I do think that these days, especially because we think we know mm-hmm. so much about types of people, mm-hmm. taking the time to understand a person's story, mm-hmm. I think, closes some of those distances.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And there's really interesting neuroscience research that shows that when two people are, you know, when you were telling a story, when each of you were telling that story, that the research would suggest that, like, the brains of everybody in this room were kind of following your brain patterns. There's something literally about a story that kind of connects two people and gets them on the same wavelength. And you know, we live in a time where, as I think you're implying, there's so much divisiveness and we're quick to judge people based on superficial factors like who they voted for, what they look like, where they're from. And one of the most humanizing things that we can do is instead of judging them is ask them about their story and to create this kind of moment of intimacy and belonging with them. So Naharika and Carolee, you both mentioned role models. Jamila, I'm wondering if you have one that you'd like to throw in there or someone who inspired you.
Okay, so I think most of my life I was very anti the idea of role model because I felt like people are human and I didn't want to latch on to any one individual in a way that I was disappointed at some point. But I think my philosophy, though, was looking at a bunch of different people in different areas and saying, you know, what does this person excel at? Oh, I love the way, you know, this woman presents herself in a very professional way. And so I want to model that. And I love the way that this person speaks, or I love the way that this person has been able to, you know, grow a successful business or whatever it is. And so I think I've adapted more of a philosophy of learning different things from people so that it can inform me to be my own model. I think that when we're really, you know, striving for different things in life, all my achievers in the room, that it's you want to be competing with yourself and not get caught into a comparison trap. And so for me, I've always tried to work on how can I beat my best, and how can I leverage the models that other people have set in different areas of life or work to be able to inform my best. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I want to sort of add to that thought and sort of build on this. I think many of us here, everything has to be meaningful. Mm-hmm. Not everything has to be meaningful.
Yeah.
There's just some things that just don't matter. Mm-hmm. And dropping that and sort of moving on, I think, is, again, another discipline, another skill to kind of adopt. When you're so emotionally vested in everything you do, sometimes you can almost sort of get into this rut where, you know, I have to do this because it's meaningful and I have to do that. I think, you know, giving ourselves a break to kind of say, you know what, that really doesn't matter, I think is one of the most important skills to develop in this sort of environment that we live in. And giving yourself that mental break to say, you know, I'm going to cut your slack, give you a break, move on, I think is really important.
Yeah, exactly. I mentioned the phrase burn in earlier, which I said was from a friend of mine, and she just did a research project where she went out and she interviewed the best teachers all around the country in urban environments that she could kind of, you know, get her hands on. And she wanted to find out what's the difference between the teachers who burn out, and many of them do, and those who burn in, those who stick with it and who continue to be great teachers. And what she found is that the ones who burned in and who stuck with it and continue to be great teachers took time for themselves. And so if you're devoting yourself to a meaningful pursuit, the best way that you could keep devoting yourself to it and to make sure that you're kind of sustaining your energy is to kind of take time and to know when things that are not important can be let go of, basically. I think we have a few more minutes, and I thought we would end by talking about the kind of person that we aspire to be. So, you know, we're all talking about these different role models that we have, people that we looked up to, and I think that so many of us go through life picking people like this and saying, oh, I like this about this person. She's a really kind person. Oh, I like, she's such a hard worker, or he was so generous to me. And then we try to kind of like incorporate those qualities into our own character. And so I'm curious, what would you guys like, how would you guys like people to talk about you if you're not in the room, or if one day there's like an NPR story about you and you and your granddaughter is listening? What do you want that story to say? What do you want the aspects of character to be that really come to light?
So, I mean, I'll start. Okay. Don't know what the story is, but I would love that story to be filled with surprises. So similar to what I experienced with my grandfather, like, wow, I didn't know that about, you know, her, or, you know, when did she do that? Or I didn't know that she was committed to sort of these spiritual, you know, sort of routines or whatever. I think sort of this whole notion that we are participating in our community as a whole person is important to me. And that really kind of lends itself to a bunch of different types of things, whether it's interests, being a creative, being a mother, you know, being, you know, an employee, a worker. And I think that if there was a story that was written, hopefully that story would be filled with a lot of surprises for the reader.
It's
awesome.
Unexpected.
And that each of those identities, mother, worker, spiritual person, are sources of meaning.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess I could go next. I think about this question sometimes more from the perspective of my funeral, right? So what would I want my funeral to be like? First, I want it to be a party. I don't want anyone like crying. I want it to be a celebration of life party. But I think I would want the people there to say that they had a lot of fun with me, that I inspired them to live their dreams, to do something that they didn't think they could do, and that I helped push them to actually make that goal or dream happen. And I want that to be said not just with people in my career, but I spend a lot of time with my nieces and nephews, with my sister, my mom, my dad, even with my parents, you know, being at a different stage of life now. I want to be able to still inspire them, you know, in their 60s to be able to live their dreams and do the things that they haven't done yet. So for me, I think that's what I'm living every day and the work that I aspire to. How can I help people to really go for what they want?
That's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the beautiful stories. But I think the only thing that I would add to that differently is I like to do a lot of things, and I have a lot of passion and a lot of love for a lot of things and a lot of interest. I get bored easily. But taking a page of, who's seen Hamilton in the audience? Anybody? You know how it ends? Yeah, best show ever. Who's going to tell your story? And I think part of what I'd like is that many people tell many different stories about me. And each story has something different because they personally experienced something different about me. So that would be my goal.
I mean, these are all so great and inspiring. And I think it gives us, like, when you think about it in terms of, like, what do I want people to talk about or what do I want them to say at my funeral, it gives us all, like, we can work towards that. Like, we can make that happen by living it out today.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a moment now and thank our panelists and...
We also have an opportunity for you to ask questions of our panel up here. So there are some microphones right up here, all around the room. And so if you have any questions, please line up and ask your question. And also, I'll begin by asking a question or maybe even making a comment myself. You referred to the fact that relationships are very important. And I know that for me, friendships are extremely important. I have many friends in the audience here today who are supporting me being up here in front of all of you folks. So I'm wondering if you could refer to and talk about the importance of especially women friendships.
I think we should ask my friends sitting here in the audience.
Hey.
They were doing all the screaming in the beginning, right?
I'll start in that it's, like I said, opening up a new lane. You can get so focused on life, career, succeeding, and I think sometimes it's a discipline that you have to build, and I love my friends. They help me, part of my community, and it's a beautiful thing.
You know, the session isn't over. I just want to remind folks out there. So if you have any questions, please come up to the microphone. Yes. Anyone else wanted to respond to that?
Yeah, I would say about friendship too. I think that the one of the most greatest joys that I have is having a really meaningful conversation with one of my friends, especially if it's, you know, a woman friend. And I think that there are so, like, we don't always go there with our friends. Like, a lot of times we're just talking about kind of meaningless things, like not what actually matters to us. And so I would encourage you to actually go there with your friends. And if you're thinking about, oh, like, I'm really struggling with something, or I wish that my life were different in whatever way, to, like, talk about that with your friends and to open up the space, to make yourself vulnerable, to really get to those deeper conversations.
All right, anyone else want to comment?
Sure. So I think it's important to have different types of friends, different groups of friends. So I participate in different women's networking groups. I also lead a community of women entrepreneurs called Success Circle. And I think it's important to be able to have different relationships for different areas of your life. So you mentioned book club. I participated in a women's group for a book club. So I think it's really important to be able to have like I said, these different types of relationships. But the reason I think that it's important is because oftentimes as women, we feel like we need mentorship or that we're missing mentors. And a lot of the people that you might aspire to have as mentors aren't necessarily available, or they feel time-starved and that they're not able to dedicate that space. But I've been able to leverage peer mentorship and working with different friends. Like, we were working on branding for the company, and one of my girlfriends was a brand manager at P&G and ran all their entrepreneurial business. So I like got on the phone with her, and we were able to brainstorm different ideas. So I think it's really important as women that we leverage these peer relationships to be able to get that support, the ideas that you need, and the accountability that can help you to grow.
Great.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
Okay, let's go right to our audience.
Hello.
Over here, tell us who you are and what your question or comment is.
Hi, my name is Sue Fiorentino. Thank you very much for this panel. I thought it was very helpful. My question is I'm curious about the relationship between, if there's been any research done on the connection between faith and meaning. Talk about role models, my 91-year-old mother wakes up every day and goes and volunteers at the local soup kitchen, and she poo-poos it when we say, wow, you're doing such great work. And she says, it gets me out of bed every day. I have purpose. But she's also very religious, and I'm not. And I'm wondering if there's been research done on whether people who have strong faith systems have that meaning component.
No, absolutely. And thank you for mentioning that, because when Carol Lee mentioned spirituality, it made me think, oh, we need to talk about that piece of it a little bit more. Yes, like people who do have kind of religious and spiritual commitments do tend to rate their lives as more meaningful. And if you'll recall, I talked about briefly in that when I was researching my book, so I read through, you know, thousands of pages of psychology and philosophy, theology, and I interviewed, you know, dozens of people to figure out what is it that makes life meaningful for people. A lot of them are religious, but those four pillars that I mentioned, belonging, purpose, storytelling, and transcendence, what struck me was that they each are really important parts of spiritual and religious systems. You know, you have that community, you have a purpose, whether it's growing closer to God or doing good work in your community. You have a story that explains why the world is the way it is, why you are the way you are. And you have these opportunities for transcendence through rituals, services, prayer, meditation, whatever it may be. So I think that the great thing about religion is that it's this kind of, it offers clear answers to what the meaningful life is and instructs you on how to lead it. But those four pillars, you can kind of build them in your life without religion as well. And I certainly saw a lot of people doing that as I interviewed them and as I went through the research as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Question?
Hi, Lorraine. My name is Swati Chaturvedi, and I'm a fourth-time attendee. I've been adrift a while, and at least the last 2 years, I've come to Lorraine and said, one day I'm going to come to you and share a story. I feel like I'm finally finding my purpose. There's meaning. So I'm the founder of the Community Bollywood Dance Project, and what's meaningful and purposeful to me is to celebrate life, one dance, one story at a time. So it's great. I get choked up because I go, yay, I found it. My question to you ladies is now, if you could give me one tip, one advice, as you know, you talk about playing big. Once you find that purpose where you feel it, how do you start playing big? What does that mean to each one of you?
So I'll take a shot at it. One of the things I feel very strongly about is sort of a muscle around making decisions. So if you're seeking for purposeful next steps, or if you're looking to expand upon what you're doing, I'd sort of reframe the question or the thought process, say, what are some of the decisions that I need to make, and how do I proceed forward? Because by doing that, it really gives you an opportunity to do something that contributes to the end game, your goal, whatever it is that you're looking to do. And so if I was to give you one piece of advice, and even for the young ladies in this room, this art of making a decision is so critical. And you know, do it often, trust yourself, and ask yourself, you know, what are the next couple of decisions I need to make?
Can I add something too?
Sure.
So by the way, share your passion. And I'd love to come learn. So you have a customer now. But there's this saying that it takes the first follower to make a nut job a visionary. I think your passion, there's only so much that we can spread, right, and influence. So get those followers. Get those word of mouth influencers who can help you share your story and extend your impact.
So if I can make an ask of this room, please visit my Facebook page. It's called Community Bollywood Dance Project. And I launched my website today, so it is still, you know, yay, it's a baby step forward. So thank you, ladies. Thank you.
So I just wanted to add one quick thing, too. I think it's really clear to get, important to get clear on your future vision. So even if it's just a year from now or 3 years from now. So I use a process called career modeling or brand modeling, where I put down in a vision journal what I intend to accomplish over the next year. So if you, I'd love to invite you to our booth. I actually have my vision journal there, and I can show you exactly what this process looks like.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And you're ready to tell your story? We need to talk.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have a question or a comment? Yes, please.
Hi, I'm Claudia Williams, and I'm the mother of two daughters. They're 13 and 11, but for those of us who feel meaning and purpose in our lives, whether it's a mentee, a protege, a child, where's the fine line between helping guide them to find their purpose and pushing them perhaps in a direction they don't
good
want to
question.
Go?
Question.
You know, I don't know if this is really going to answer your question, but I'll tell you about this study, the series of studies that I came across that I thought were really compelling. So the studies went into high school and colleges, and the researchers wanted to figure out if getting young people to think about their purpose would help them be better at school and be less distracted by technology and things like that. And so what they found was that it indeed did. But I think what's really interesting was how they got them to think about their purpose. So what they did was they gave them a writing prompt that said something like, you know, a lot of people grow up and they want to make a difference in the world. And we all have the ability to make some kind of difference in the world. So what difference do you want to make in the world? And it had them write about it. And then the ones who did, the ones who, in other words, like came up with this self-transcendent goal, you know, some people wrote about becoming a lawyer to help people, others wrote about becoming a doctor, whatever, that they ultimately ended up doing better in school and better, you know, in terms of not being distracted by video games and things like that. And the researchers said that the reason was because this exercise gave them a purpose for learning, a purpose for not getting distracted. And I thought it was also very, it wasn't kind of a hard hammering exercise. Like, it just got them to think beyond themselves in terms of these bigger goals. And so that might be a first step. And I think there is other research showing that when people feel like they are not autonomously responsible for the goals that they're trying to accomplish, they're going to be less motivated to accomplish them. So to the extent that you can get them to think on their own about what their purpose is and then kind of enable them to accomplish it. And the other thing is that people around them who role model living purposefully inspire them to live more purposefully as well. So that's the other piece of it.
And I would just sort of add, so my daughter is 13. She's sitting here in the audience. Mm-hmm. And Maddie Mitchell, right here. And I struggle with the same thing. And so I think I tend to focus a ton on values, priorities, perspective, and almost sort of enabling her to find her own paths of passion, her own paths of sort of interests that will eventually become meaningful to her. So what I'm finding, crazy, what's meaningful to me might not necessarily be meaningful to her. I'm not sure how that happened, but it's happening, and I think sort of the openness for that, making sure that there's a path for her to take, I think is an important thing.
Yeah, I have three nieces and two nephews. And what I've found with all of them, but especially the girls, is letting them explore the things that they're excited about more. So I think oftentimes young people are hammered with what not to do, you know, and, you know, don't leave your bed unmade, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I've been able to give them a place to explore things that they're excited about. So as an example, one activity we did was creating their own commercials. So I just pulled out my camera and had them, you gotta come up with a commercial about anything you want. It has to be a beginning, a middle, and an end, some kind of call to action. And they loved it. And it was interesting to see what each of them came up with as different ideas. So I think let them experiment and play with the variety of things that they're interested in and give them room to really explore it.
We have time for just one quick question, and then we have to close it out. So you have the last one.
Sure. What brought me in was social comparison and burnout. Mm-hmm. And mine kind of go hand in hand, considering I'm 2 years out of school, and I'm consistently competing with people around me. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, for someone who doesn't necessarily have a work purpose just yet, just a lot of motivation, what's some healthy ways to compete and not run yourself crazy trying to, you know, come out on top?
Small challenges and small commitments. You know, that's when things get to be so massively complex, difficult, challenging, you feel like crap, you just want to sleep. Setting small challenges and commitments, I think, is one of the ways I kind of pick myself up. Mm-hmm. And I think that also leverage your community, leverage your friends, and being competitive is something, you know, I can relate, but you'll find that all of us sitting in this room are somewhat competitive. And I think there are moments where, and I've had to learn how to do this, you need to open up, ask friends for help. People, you'd be surprised how many people will come and have a conversation with you, lend a hand, and really help you to kind of get to that next phase and leverage that to whatever extent you can.
We've come to the end of our time, and I want to thank you so much for the question. Thank you all for being here. Emily will be signing books. Will you be signing books?
Yes, I will be signing books wherever books are sold here.
Wherever books are sold. Yeah. In the exhibition hall. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us. Thank our panel members.
Oops. Now my phone's off.